Live and in color. After a great weekend. Hope everybody had a great weekend. As good as mine. That started last Wednesday. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee for the next 2 hours, including Leaf Edition in this hour. Wherever you're watching and listening, Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus, we're glad you're aboard. And always text us at 590, 590. We'll get as many thoughts and ideas, if they warrant, from our good man, Sammy. All right, boys.
I will say now, it's weird having you here.
After just 3 days?
Yeah, because I got used to, I sat there for a little bit, Kipper, which was horrible. I did not like it. And then Gord Stellick sat there on Friday. So it's very, very weird.
I wish I could tell you that I tuned in and listened. I didn't.
I'd be disappointed if you did.
We survived.
I did manage to get a few people texting me, including either Wednesday or Thursday. You guys did a two-hour special on the signing of Bobby McMahon, I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, we did dive into that a bit. Yeah.
Yes, I heard that. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, Doug McLean, how dare him come on without me?
I know. It was like
he had the confidence to do it because I feel the pressure of every Off the Rails Friday to carry him.
It's like when you go out to dinner with your buddy who has a girlfriend. The three you go out, you're kind of the third wheel, and then your buddy goes to the bathroom, and you're left with his girlfriend. Like, hey,
so
you like stuff? Your thoughts on weather?
Gord Stella came in and did a great job.
Oh yeah,
he did. I mean, Gord was.
Hey, you know what? Chili. I don't think the show sucked as bad as I thought it would.
Hey, that's an accurate line.
It's not like it was all hunky-dory for me the last 3 or 4 days in Florida golfing.
Was it hard? Yeah.
You know what the hardest part was?
Oh, boy.
Standing beside Henrik Lundqvist.
Yeah.
For like 3 days.
Sure. That's tough.
You know what kind of pressure?
You hung over for 3 days?
Do you know the pressure to be beside a man that good-looking?
Yeah. I mean, I don't experience that a lot with you, but I imagine in other places I would feel that way.
Other people experience that with me a lot, so I don't really know that feeling.
You're on that side of it. But.
I'm like, when I found out he was going to be down there, and the Rangers were kind enough to bring half a dozen of us down there for Rangers in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And there
look
we are.
On the crew.
So myself, Stefan Matteau, Aaron Voorhees, Adam Graves, Dom Moore, Adam Hall. And look at me, right beside Lundqvist, like I'm facing it dead on, right?
God, he looks so good.
I brought down the baby blue leisure suit.
Nice, love that one.
Yeah, Blue Industry. And my good friend Hershey set me up with that suit.
Nice.
And I'm like, I'm going up against Lundqvist, man. Bring
He's
it.
Just rocking a straight leather Bring jacket. It. And you played golf.
Played a couple days in Tampa, and then moved over to Cabot Citrus Farms.
The new Cabot.
Yeah, the
baby.
New Cabot.
Yeah.
It like off the charts.
You hit it good?
I shot a 81.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
With a triple bogey.
Oh.
Yes.
God, that's infuriating.
That's a good start,
though. How early or late was the triple?
The triple came around 14.
So you're thinking about the score. You're like,
yes. I made the worst mistake.
Oh.
I started thinking, par, and I come in with...
Never do that.
Nope. Well, you didn't miss a ton on the hockey front outside of the McMahon signing. Nothing major broke or anything.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, too, was everybody telling me that I was wrong and Sammy was right on the Bobby McMahon.
First time for everything.
Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah. Which he's right? Not right, and I'm not wrong.
JD made your case, though, that he would have... Maybe he left a lot of money on the table.
He signed a brutal contract for himself. Hey, awesome for the Leafs.
Yeah.
Awesome for Brad Treliving that you got a guy that you really are going to need down the stretch here and count on as a top six forward for the price of a fourth line player.
Yeah.
Like, it's a steal.
They had him. They had to replace Holmberg on the first line in the third period last game. They put McMahon on the top line. You got a guy you can use in the first line for $1.35 million.
Maybe they should have given him $4 million.
The guy could have gone minus 30 the rest of the season. They could have got swept in the first round, four games, and I could have got him the contract still that he signed.
This is high praise for McMahon, though. This is it means you like the player.
Yes,
you think he's legit.
I do. Yeah. Absolutely. And
I thought he might have been their best player on Saturday.
Sunday, best player?
Saturday, best player, yeah.
He blew by Marty Natchez, who might be the fastest guy in the league, on one of those shorthanded rushes. It was impressive.
All right, Jake Guentzel scores in a shootout to lift Hurricanes past the Toronto Maple Leafs in a game that should have cruised into a 4-2 final, maybe a 5-2 final with an empty netter. That wasn't the case. In the last, minute and 32, Aho scores, and then 5.8 seconds.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are, JB?
Well, my thoughts are that I thought they were kind of unlucky for, you know, the final goal that goes in is a seeing eye shot that goes through a ton of traffic and finds Aho's stick, who's just dusting himself off. A little bit unlucky. I did think that they really missed Marner and Yarncroc in those big moments, you know, to defend a lead at the end of a game. You'd always have Mitch out there. Mm-hmm. But also just the one at the end of the third period or second period hurts too. You're up 3-0. Going into the break. You know, that one, you had Holmberg couldn't quite tie up a guy.
That made it 3-2. They were up 3-1, and then that made it 3-2 going into the third.
In the final minute, that's right. That one made it 3-2. You know, so, yeah, they had that game in their hand. I thought they were the better team. I thought they deserved to win. Little unlucky, but at the same time, had some trouble locking it down.
It felt like they were playing themselves. Yeah. Like a team that the Carolina, I mean, they played maybe their worst game they've played in a long time. They still found a way to win. They were turning the puck over. It just felt like they were playing the Leafs. Carolina turns the puck over a bunch, has the puck a bunch, ties it up late, and wins in overtime. It's like, what, did they play themselves, the Leafs? It just really felt like a Leafy-type game from the Canes, but I don't know. Just
even to touch
concerning
on,
trends.
Even to touch on your end of the second that you said that brought them back into the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember like the first shift of the third period. They were pulling the puck off their goal line.
Yeah.
15
yeah.
seconds in.
Yeah.
That should have been a tie score at that point.
That one actually rolled off Samsonov's pad and turned. It changed direction.
That's you're not ready. Like you took a 3-0 lead. Disappeared. You're in the dressing room. What is being said? Where's the focus that you would come out in the first 20 seconds and give that scoring opportunity up? That's the one thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not so much, okay, you blew a lead, okay? We can make as big of a mountain out of that
I
as
don't
you
think
want.
That was much.
But that to me suggests that something's wrong or something just isn't nailed down between
the
second and third.
You thought that was a bad scoring chance, that first shift? I thought it was kind of a random scramble that just kind of bounced around and Samsonov should have been better on.
Yeah. No, I just think collectively that it's just too loose for me.
Yeah.
Coming off what should have been a real, hey, boys, we need a solid 20 here to bring this thing home.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. The start of that then and the ends of the periods, like it didn't feel like a complete focus necessarily, but they did, you know, carry the play, expected goal shots, chances, all those sort of things. Four even strength goals, it was pretty good. Their PK stunk too. And I think the PK was another important piece of this where they've been really bad.
Well, that's the biggest, is the special teams.
Yeah.
Because they were 0-for-4 on the power play again.
Too, yeah.
And they got a 4-on-3 in overtime where they really don't get much of a scoring chance. It doesn't look great. They're trying 2D-men on the power play.
That was.
It's just, it feels like they're really searching. And, like, this is a thing that when spring comes, it really starts to struggle.
They were 50% in February.
They're 5%.
Yeah.
Or below that because they went 0-for-4. They were 5% going into the game.
Yeah.
When spring starts, it's when the power play really starts to go to sleep, and it's happening again. And that's terrifying. Because if you're going to beat Boston or Florida, you know what you're going to need?
Yeah.
Is a good power play.
Yes.
So.
All right, where do you want to start on your Clippers?
Let's do the overview. Keith had to shuffle the lines up on Saturday night.
Yeah, the overview of that.
Yeah.
Clip one.
I thought we did a good job with it. You know, I thought there was... There's spots kind of on each line, you know, you're trying to find some chemistry. You're kind of trying to rely on some of our more experienced guys to bring others along. It's a game that requires, you know, four lines or certainly three for sure. And you can't, the pace of the play is high, and you can't get too concerned with chasing matchups and such, especially with how they utilize the stall line. So you got to rely on guys. And I thought we got good efforts from guys here tonight. Like I said, the result sucks, you know, but I thought we stood in there. I thought we at times carried play. I thought we scored four goals. Very easily could have had three or four more against a team, again, that gives up almost nothing. So there's a lot of encouraging things here today if we look at it from a process point of view that we really like. But obviously there's these key moments in the game that we've got to do a better job of.
Okay. So, before we get into any specifics here, there's a real sense here that he is staying away from the end result of just a blown lead that sends everybody home going, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
Are you okay with that at this point of the season? If we were five games into the season, should there be more emphasis on, I don't care, no points for trying hard, no point. It's just result-driven here. Is he too positive right now and not result-focused? For you?
Well, I think you're asking a very important question because it's going to be a question for this Leafs team the next month. Today's March 18th. The regular season ends April 18th, 1 month from now. The Leafs are the only team in the Eastern Conference with a point total in the 80s. They have 85 points. So the next closest they can catch is at 90, and below them is 78 or something. They're not catching anyone or getting caught. So the results of these games don't matter. Now.
Great.
Great. I know. Terrible. It's a terrible way to play a game.
We're right back into where we've been for 3 years here.
Right. Which is awful.
Well, I guess last year they were fighting for home ice, so it's a bit different last year, but we're pretty similar spot.
So I can see why Sheldon is saying, we liked our game. I'm not going to get caught up in the result. I actually thought we played a really good game. But it's a good question. If they have this attitude from here to playoffs, they're going to get rolled over in game one by teams that have been competing for results. So maybe, I don't know, is it too soon to start saying, hey, we're actually less concerned with process now. Process has got us this far. Now we want to see results?
Yeah, I would have liked to seen them light it up a little bit more through the media on the emphasis of the blown loss. Just a tad more, just to give them a sense of urgency here to say that a game isn't complete until it's 60 minutes of regulation, and it doesn't matter, you know, all the positives that you see. If you cannot close, if you cannot shut down, and I get it. I get the feeling of what are we playing for here, right? There's no home ice, and I don't want to make everybody hate me or get tired of me. I still got, what do we got, 16 games to go, 17 games to go?
Yep.
So I don't need to lean on them that much, but where's that fine line, right?
Well, I mean, he's perhaps made that judgment, you know, that it's not a month before and 16 games to go, that it's time to do that. Maybe we'll see him turn that on a little bit as we get going a little bit, but it is a worry right now that the Leafs, you know, when Gord was on Friday, we were talking a lot about how teams that are in a dogfight tend to come out in the games that matter on the other side more prepared. So,
you know, like a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are right now, every game means a ton, and they're starting to get hot.
Where they've three in a row.
Won three in a row. I mean, would you see the shots on goal in that? It was like 50-14, the shots on goal for Florida in that game. But Vasilevskiy plays great. They get the win three in a row. They beat the Rangers when Kipper was there. And it's like they're getting hot at the right time. They're having to play all these games, and the Leafs are once again playing meaningless ones. It's not a good trend.
Tampa Bay Thursday night, we're down 2-0 to the Rangers, and
you sent some texts.
Pretty much looking like that inconsistent Tampa Bay Lightning, and then it was like the Braden Point show and the Kucherov show. And these guys are like, oh, that's right. They're Stanley Cup champions too, right?
I mean, they're very likely, I guess right now it could be the Rangers or Boston or Florida that they're going to get. But any of those teams has to be like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Like, really?
Like, give me Detroit.
Yeah.
Give me Washington. Give me the Islanders. Yeah,
exactly. You got to get the Lightning.
Yeah.
So is this, let's just wait for Mitch Marner to come back on the penalty kill?
Well, Yarncroc too, but no. So they had Duer take Mitch's spot on the top pair with Kampf, and they were good as a pair. But I think there's still some learning going on with Edmondson and Lyubushkin now taking big minutes, and they hadn't been a part of the rotation previously. The one thing I will say with Edmondson and Lyubushkin, and the Leafs defended their blue line better than they have all year. Like, Carolina could not get in the zone. They entered the zone with 40% success rate, which is super low. Leafs were 70 the other way, which was what led to all the quick hit breakaways the other way.
70 to 40.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was like the Leafs were really tight at the blue line, and that's something that maybe, it is something Lyubushkin does well, and it's something that Edmondson does well. So it could be a bright spot for the Leafs is blue line defense.
Okay, let's go to Sheldon Keefe on Connor Duer.
I think he's doing a good job. I think, again, tonight, I think there's some great moments. I mean, that breakaway he had shorthanded, the speed he pulls away, an opportunity, that's another key moment in the game, right? If I'm remembering correctly, like, that's one where we don't score on, and they score shortly after. But he's a smart player. He's a useful guy, especially right now with the penalty killers that we have out and the guys that have great defensive acumen, and that's kind of what they hang their hat on. I think he's right there for us, so the timing is right with Mitch and Yarny out for us to bring him aboard.
Minnesota didn't want that guy?
Yeah, I like him.
Me too.
Like, I think he seems like a useful player to me.
Yeah.
But
you got a first impression?
Yeah, listen, energy guy, not scared. Listen, the last few years, they've been okay with picking up some depth guys, bottom six guys that can come in. I was a big Lafferty fan with that trade.
Yeah.
I really liked them. And those guys, you need them. You absolutely need them.
Yeah.
Of course, they have to go hand in hand with your best players being your best players, but that's depth to go 2-3 into a series. And
yeah,
that
he's
includes
a 24-year-old RFA, too.
You know, and in my article, I wrote on Nick Robertson. Like, you need 23, 24 guys, 25. If you go back to the belief that it takes 8-9 defensemen to win deep into the playoffs, talking about a 25-man roster, these guys all have to show up together. So he adds to that depth.
He does for sure. And he's going to help with the penalty kill, you would think, in theory.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it.
To me, if there's one thing that, if you're Sheldon Keefe, that you're sort of using as a, you know, something you're playing for, it's like, let's get this power play to this percentage. Let's get this penalty kill to this percentage over the next stretch heading into playoffs. Like, let's really work to improve that, because, you know, we can listen to Keefe talk about that. But to me, that's the biggest issue with special teams.
Yeah.
Like, I really think that they're a fine 5-on-5 team. Like, I think they have good players, goal scorers, whatever. But just going against those teams, like I said, that they're potentially going to play in the first round, they're going to get killed on special teams if they keep playing like this. Like,
yeah.
Florida and Boston
are 23rd in the league.
They're worse than that now, aren't they?
They're bottom third for sure.
PK for the Leafs is, they're way down there.
Yeah,
24th.
They're going to get. Is that the worst out of any playoff team?
Yes. Islanders are last in the league if they get in. But yes, currently, they're the worst of a team in the playoffs.
Like, you guys know, it's going to kill them.
Well, I mean, you just know the way Pasta, you know, and Marchand can do it, and the way you talk about Kucherov and Point and those guys and some of the elite teams.
Yeah.
You need to be on the ball. Let's listen to Sheldon talk about his penalty kill there. Clip 2, please.
I actually liked a lot of things about our penalty kill tonight. I mean, we killed the first 7 minutes of penalties we killed tonight. And we did a lot of really good things. We made a mistake with just a few seconds left at the end of the second period. And aside from that, our penalty killing was actually the best it's been in quite a while tonight against a very good power play. So the results look bad tonight. You know, they scored another one 6-on-4. Our best penalty killer sitting in the penalty box. The other two are in a suit. So that's a tough one to get through, but you got to find a way. So the results look bad tonight, but I think when we watch it back in the process, there's going to be a lot of good things in there that we'll like. Like I said, we get through 7 minutes. Penalty late at the end of the second period, penalty late at the end of the third period. Those are the types of things you just can't take those penalties.
That penalty call at the end of the third was garbage, but anyway.
What?
Another.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Yeah.
Leafs fans were so bent out of shape about it.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting on the couch, real time, first look, I'm like, that's a penalty.
Yeah.
I immediately, if I'm on the refi on the ice, I'm arms up. He got his stick into his hands. He pulled. Orlov sold it clearly. He went like this. Yeah. He did the thing or whatever.
You're getting that call a thousand out of a thousand times when you're down two goals. And more importantly,
get your stick out of his hands.
He is.
You put it in the ref's hands at that point.
He is not. He's out of position.
Not moving his feet.
He's on the outside, giving Orlov the inside track to the middle of the ice.
Right.
And you put a stick on a guy, you're gonna get called.
Yeah, you do invite the ref the opportunity to make a call, whether it's right or wrong. I see it a bit differently,
but I agree. You lost body position.
Exactly.
You're on the outside when you should be on the inside of a player like that.
Boy, the slow-mo, though, isn't pretty.
No,
on that one.
Not a penalty. But yes, I know what you're saying. It looks like, but he doesn't do that.
Well, that's not what happened. He's reaching out.
It's a perception thing. I get why you can see that. Yeah.
I would have called it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And then just hearing Sheldon talk about the PK, like just, it would be really sufficient if you just said, hey, if it doesn't improve, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
We won't go anywhere. And just leave it at that. Put the onus on the players to understand the sense of urgency that this better get cleaned up or we're toast.
Yeah.
How early is too early to... It seems to me that your takeaways are about Keefe's commentary rather than the game.
Well, I don't know whether or not he just wants to kind of ease this into the last 15 games of the season or not, or he truly believes that... It's just we're getting some bad bounces. Our best penalty killer still not playing in Mitch Marner, and it's going to get cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it is unless there's maybe even some tactical changes. Maybe they need to be more aggressive. Maybe they're just too flat-footed for me. Maybe they're just not forcing the issue enough. But whatever it is, just don't sit there and say, hey, it'll get better.
What if
naturally.
In your guy's mind, what makes a good penalty kill philosophically?
To me, it's just, I think it's all personality, player personnel driven. I don't think that there's some super creative way to play it. I think it's stops and starts, like energy guys in lanes, like guys who...
Effort.
Effort guys who aren't thinking about other things than
just
the kill.
A really good stick, right? And it's an extension of taking lanes away, and you're not getting beat in front of the net. That's all.
I do think it is eye-opening that this relates to your question about the PK, that at the end of the game when they're trying to protect that lead, if there's a takeaway, the guys on the ice are Tavares, Nylander,
and McMahon. Yeah.
You know, and they kind of got hung out there for a long shift. Like, that's our best option. I think it was the second best option because Camp was just on the bench waiting to go out or whatever. But that was concerning that, like, who's going to protect leads for this team?
We got an update on Mitch Marner?
We do have an update.
Ish.
Would you like to hear the setup?
I would love to hear it.
Clip 5, please, Derek.
He's not going to be coming on the trip with us. Trying to get him to the point that he's comfortable throughout the week. So he's day-to-day away from being day-to-day.
Did he skate today?
He did not.
What the hell does that mean?
That's where the day-to-day is. Day-to-day on skating, and then we'll figure him out from there.
Was that a sign that something was wrong? Or
no, it's just that it hasn't been responding the way that they had hoped. So just stepping back a little bit with it.
It's not nuclear codes. Can we maybe just hear like what's wrong with him a little bit?
Well, seriously,
day to day for being day to day. What are we doing here?
What is it you need to hear then?
Yeah, he's sore and he's probably not going to play this week.
He skated on it the other day. He had a setback.
What's a setback mean? What's a euphemism? What happened? You roll it? Does it hurt? Did you swell up the next day?
Yes. Whatever it is, it's not good enough to practice with the team.
Yeah.
So What are you playing for? Why are you going to rush him back?
No.
He's got a outside shot of playing against Edmonton Saturday. See how it feels in the next 3 days.
So your level of concern on this is not that high, Kippy.
Oh, no. I'd poop my pants if I was a Leaf fan right now.
Oh, like you mean in terms of it, knowing what you know? Or
no,
knowing...
No. I don't know anything more than you guys know.
Okay.
Like, come on.
I don't know.
He heard it.
Yeah.
It's not responding. This is Sheldon talking. This is not me.
But like...
It's not good enough for him to go on the trip.
They need him. They need
what
him.
What are you looking for right now?
Oh, well, I just... For the greater being... No, you're 100% right.
Yeah, they've been real good the last three games, right?
Sit him as long as it needs.
For sure.
But here's the but part.
Mm-hmm.
Those things, they don't heal that easy. They don't.
What are those things? Ankle?
High ankle.
Okay.
They don't heal that well, that fast.
No, and it does leave you predisposed to further ankle injuries.
Look at Wall. How many games has he played in almost 3 months?
Two. I can tell you it's two. I can't believe he didn't play.
Right choice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'd like to see him getting some hockey games here. They gave him the Bruins last Saturday now. It's been 10 days. Did he hurt it or something? There's a reason. I don't know. If we were saying wins and losses don't matter, weren't we supposed to be trading starts for these guys?
You can't tell Keith that wins and losses don't matter, right? Like, you know the way he coaches. To me, Samsonov was so good against the Flyers. He earned that start again.
Yeah. Everyone is way too excited about Ilya Samsonov. Everybody I talked to with the Leafs needs to settle down. He almost got back to an 890. Almost got back, but he didn't. Yeah. He gives up four the other night. The one hits him in the chest and he drops it.
The record's good.
Yeah, the record's good because the team is good. If Wohl were in net, it'd be good too. Everyone's like, Wohl hasn't won since he got back. They gave him Boston.
I do two shows. I do Leafs Talk with you, and then I was with Bunkus, and it's like, he loves you, and it's like, you guys are like, he stinks. It's great.
I love having both sides. It's thing to be like, well, Sammy's back. Isn't everyone happy? Everyone's happy Sammy's back, aren't they? Yeah, well, what's he been over the past?
As far as I'm concerned, I told you guys a long time ago, Sammy can run it, and... You're not sure who's starting. No, that's not that you're not sure who's starting. You're not that confident still. Like, he can start game one, but he's like 20 minutes away from getting pulled. He's 60 minutes away from not starting game two.
For sure. I saw someone today, maybe it was Jonas Siegel or something, in the article today. It was like, seems like Samsonov is passing Wohl for the number one job. I'm Joseph Wohl. I'm like, I was the best goalie. People were talking about me as like the next one until I hurt my ankle. I came back, got handed the Bruins twice in Boston on a Saturday, lost 4-1. But now I'm out?
If we're putting labels on it, which is stupid, but if we're doing those sports, Samsonov is 100% the starting goalie right now. No question.
What a stupid, arbitrary thing to decide.
Well, I mean, there's been starters and backups for pretty much the whole existence of the league.
Let's reframe that. Okay. If we just move the date.
Yeah.
He's right. He's Samsonov starting.
Sure. They play tomorrow. He's definitely starting because Wohl's off an ankle injury and there's only two games.
Like the playoffs started tomorrow? Yes. Obviously.
If the pattern or the trend of the last 2 weeks follows, then they have no other choice but to put Samsonov to start game one.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
But boy, I wouldn't be thrilled about it.
No.
The only thing is, though, at this point, for Joseph Wohl to have a chance to play game one.
He needs to play.
Not only does he need to play, he needs 3 out of 4.
Yes.
Right? He needs a week to 10 days of 7 out of 10 starts to gain that momentum and the confidence. If they switch on and off every other game here going in, it's going to be hard for Joseph Wohl to convince people he's ready to carry it.
I actually wonder if they didn't look at the way the starts were falling and tried to help Wohl out a little bit in that if it had been Boston, then you get Carolina while the other guy's getting all the dogs and all the wins, you know, to kind of break the cycle and let Wohl get Philly, a team that you should be able to beat.
What will be interesting is we know that, for the most part, do we all believe that Joseph Wohl will play tomorrow night in Philly?
Yeah. I mean, he's playing one of the next two. So.
Yeah, I know. But
I do believe Philly, that way he gets Sammy to the Caps.
He gets two starts this week, two back-to-backs.
And then are you basing the next two starts from each of them the decider on who gets Edmonton Oilers at home Saturday night?
I think that's a great way to look at it. Because you know what? They play Sunday as well, and the Canes are no joke. So to me, whoever's going better gets the Saturday night game.
But does going better mean
who has a better game?
We're both equal as of 100%. Now for the next two starts? Or does
no,
anything...
everyone gets one game. Whoever plays better gets Saturday.
Sammy's done in the last 2 weeks is...
What's he done? He beat a few of the worst teams in the NHL.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. What's his record?
He beat Montreal and Buffalo.
He was good in those games.
I'm just making
so
conversation.
Is the team.
I'm not disagreeing with you here.
We're doing pitcher wins here.
This is the reason that you're terrified about this conversation going to the playoffs.
Because they don't have a very good starting goal.
Because you can convince yourself, if we're sitting here, if you're Brandon Shanahan, you're Brad Living, I'm Sheldon Keefe. We could sit in this conversation and convince yourself of whoever starts game one.
For sure.
Which, to me, I like the days of the starting goalie, where you knew who your goalie was, and it's like, oh, you know who started tonight? The goalie.
Well,
the goalie
what
who we
do
have.
What do you do when you don't have one? Do you pretend to have one? Is that a better decision?
To me, you pick one and you kind of ride with it. Until, I guess, game two of the playoffs, and you're like, who are we going
to
start?
And so Wall against Boston the last 2 days has been enough for you to disqualify him as the guy.
No, but I think Sammy's been better, which is the problem. It's like, now I'm, you know... They don't give a chance to Wall to play out of it. They have another guy. They're like, well, we got to win, so we're playing the other guy, and he plays better. It's like, oh, now the other guy doesn't get to play. Like, there's too much.
Yeah.
Game one of the playoffs, regardless of who starts, if they have a bad game, every fan's like, got to play the other guy. Got to play the other guy. If you're a starting goalie, guess who's starting the game too?
Yeah.
The starting goalie.
Yeah.
It's a horrible conversation that's really concerning for me.
Boston and Florida are second and third in the NHL in team save percentage this year. Second and third.
And I guess, but Boston's kind of similar, though. They have Ullmark and Swayman.
Yeah,
Swayman starts way more.
The last Vezina winners, their backup goalie.
They tried to trade him. And Stolarz has been good for the Cats as their backup. But
Best thing for Leafs fans is that goaltending's voodoo and anyone can get hot and anyone can stink.
I hate goalies.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break.
Sorry to all my goalie friends out there, but I just can't stand it.
Hate goalies.
The best guests at our show are all goalies. Yeah. Like, I hate them.
All right, let's take a quick break and we come back. Still plenty more to chew on for the Toronto Maple Leafs regarding the power play. No Morgan Rielly.
Second unit, pal. Right,
we'll also talk Austin Matthews' life without Mitch Marner or Willie, for that matter, on his line. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. Just back.
We're back.
That's all.
The Leafs have the worst power play in the league the last two, March. 3 weeks. March?
Yeah, March started 5%.
Ugh. Ugh.
Yeah. Ugh.
And
it's never looked worse than it did on Saturday night to me.
Well, it's not good.
There was no plan.
They had
there was
one
no
moment.
Two or three.
How there? Can...
Like, a fleeting one.
Like the one that
how can you
one
have
OT, maybe?
The number one goal scorer in the world and it's that bad?
I don't know.
I think we know not having Marner out there, he's the only passer. Nylander doesn't pass. Tavares doesn't pass. Riley's slow to move it. You know, to Sam's point, if you're going to replace Marner on the first unit, you don't do it with Bertuzzi and Tavares out there together. Domi's a guy who at least is looking to move the puck around.
He does an impression,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, he's not Marner, but he can...
He does a cover.
He can do an impression.
Yeah. Leafs power play units...
go along the watchtower.
Karaoke Marner.
Leafs power play units at practice. Liljegren, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, Bertuzzi. With the second one belonging to Morgan Rielly, Domi, McMahon, Robertson, and Knies will pick up the last 7 seconds.
Do you want to hear about Liljegren being on the top power play unit and not Morgan Rielly?
Yes,
the
I
coach?
Do.
Clip number 8, please.
Well, it's just a little more presence of those two guys that are hungry, going to be consistent on the inside around the net. Way Philadelphia kills penalties is significantly different than what you see in Carolina. So that in itself makes you want to have this type of look. And then, you know, with Lilligren, the right shot at the top, and with some of our movement and such, especially losing the righty of Mitch, we think it's important with Austin and Willie's ability to shoot and finish, to having another right shot is helpful to that. And yeah, that's really it. And we get Morgan working with the other group, and it'll give that group a boost too.
I like the second unit, to be honest.
It's just,
we're doing this and we're making a potion. We're adding Eye of Newt. Like, just put the guy who passes out there with him.
Yeah.
And Morgan Riley on Saturday, God love him, but like, they're playing him as a winger. He's like playing along the half wall. I was like, what are we doing
here? How about the one where Matthews is cocked and loaded, scraping the ceiling, and everyone and their grandma was like, Are you going to pass that? You're not.
No.
He didn't pass it. Like, Matthews is there just going like, yeah.
Okay, can I tell you something? I hate that.
What?
The stick up in the air cocked.
He's loaded for a one-timer, Kevin.
And everybody knows it. Including your opposition.
But you want to just, what do you mean?
Like, I just think it's, honest to God, I think it's a peewee look. I think it's minor hockey.
Alex Ovechkin scored 840 goals doing it.
Hey, the only thing missing is the beaver tap.
I literally don't know what point you're making. He's standing there waiting for one timer, and the puck doesn't come.
I don't want to see you. I want to see you. I don't see anybody else.
What?
Like, as a centerman or as a guy that, like, I need. Don't tip your hat that it's coming to you to shoot the puck. It may work in November, December, this time of year. They will close it off. Slavin was all over him, taking that shot away. Did you see his last attempt on it?
The overtime one?
Yeah, the overtime one. Okay. Kuchekov was there before he even shot the puck.
I mean, listen, if they're reading it, that's one thing. But when it's open to make the pass, the pass
is
going to get made.
All day long.
He was wide open, Kippy.
That one was, you know, Riley to me has these moments.
Is there a chance that you could have everybody pull and then you could find someone else open?
Yes. If we see it, Kucherov does it really well.
Can you make that pass if your stick's already up in the air?
Yes. Kucherov does that exceedingly well, right? That's that pump. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there just is no one moving it. There's no one on that unit that passes the puck.
I think everybody knows that there's one shooter on the power play now, and they're all over it. Why is it every year when you get closer to the bigger games, the power play and Austin disappear? Because it becomes more predictable as the season goes on?
I think there is a game plan when you're going against a team that has four guys who make $10 million plus, and you know who to shut down, certainly. But I don't think that's different than Ovi does it on the power play or whoever, and teams know. And ideally, you're better than those defenders. I don't know.
To me, it's like it doesn't snap around fast enough anymore. And when it does get to Austin, they're ready.
Certainly that is the case. But again, I think lots of teams have that same thing where they're ready. I also think they have Tavares who shoots and Nylander who shoots, and having one shooter is not the problem.
Well,
you
got Tavares and Bertuzzi who are going to fight for the front of the net, the top of the blue paint.
Yeah, they're a redundant role to me.
Both of them get to stand there.
And now Lilligren can sift some through to him or something. But yeah, there's actually a great tweet. Luke Fox tweeted out today that the Toronto Maple Leafs power play in the Matthews, Marner, Nylander era is 24% in the regular season, third overall, and in the playoffs, 18.6%, which is 15th out of presumably 16 teams.
That is unbelievable drop.
Yeah, it is monster.
That's when you start talking about ghosts.
But we got to go back to the fact that, like, Morgan just doesn't have a threat back there.
Yeah.
There's just no other threat.
Klingberg comes in, right?
There's no other threat, to my point where, like, the predictability is there's only one guy that's got a legit shot at beating you from 40 feet out.
Yeah, from distance, it's tough to see anyone else. Willie will too, but Willie is...
So, Are you looking for redirects? Tavares can redirect the puck. We know that.
The thing is, Kip, we've seen them be wildly successful for long stretches. Were they the best power play in the NHL last year? Or second best? Like, we've seen how it can work with these guys.
And then it's historically drops off a cliff.
Yeah, they're fifth in the league
anyways,
this year.
We can beat this up all day, yeah. But they're going to have to figure it out, not us here.
Yeah. Want the truth serum? Don't think they do. Like, it always happens. This is their Achilles. This is the sneaky Achilles heel for this whole era of hockey.
It happened against Tampa last year until it didn't against Florida.
I mean, they ran at 25% last year in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, that's sixth in the playoffs. So they were decent last year, I guess.
Better. Getting there.
Maybe
this is the year.
You got Matthews playing on the top line without Mitch or Willie. What did you like about this clip?
Well, it talks about what he has to do. It's actually kind of interesting if you want to hear it.
Let's do it.
I think there's more pucks available for Austin to be the driver and to be the facilitator for others. And at the same time, it's about finding the chemistry with those guys to have them kind of know when he's available, probably talking, communicating more, and there's less of a sort of that sense that someone like Mitch has of where Austin is and where to find him and the vision and such. A little bit different with those guys, so we're working through that a little bit. But wasn't as good against Carolina. But like we talked about, really liked how those guys played. Whether it was Jarni there or whether when Holmberg got moved up when Jarni went out. We really liked that. And Holmberg in particular had a really strong game in Philadelphia, so you want to stay with it.
I like the sounds of Matthews as a facilitator.
Thought you might catch that.
Yes. I'm all for that.
Well, he set up Bertuzzi for a peach against, was that against Philly? When he put it in front of the net, and he had 2 points in that game, but yeah.
Yeah, the Holmberg thing is an inconsistent sort of factor because he can be really, really good, like Philly, and then, against Carolina, just isn't there, and I can't tell what the difference is when Holmberg's...
Well, quality of competition, probably.
That's fair.
You're playing
against...
It's
like against... Lilligren, I find, is really good when it's a slightly lesser level of competition.
And there's... ton of pressure on guys that are just learning how to be pros too, including Holmberg and Bobby McMahon, and they're asked now to be big when they're just scratching the surface on how to be a pro, and then now how to do it in the playoffs, how to be a guy that you can count on in the playoffs. It's a lot of pressure on these guys too.
I think on Friday we had a clip where Keith was talking about McMahon, and he said, we have some things that are different with our team, like the emergence of McMahon. Like, he was basically talking about McMahon. Like, this is a guy that we're trying to figure out how high up the lineup he can play. But you're right. Come playoffs, playing Boston, playing Florida.
No training, no prior playoff training.
Think about the difference in some of the guys they're going to be using from last year to this year. Right? Like, last year it was Achari, Lafferty, Ryan O'Reilly,
guys.
Take your pick of guys.
Yeah.
And now you go right into it's the kids basically.
Yeah.
Like you got young, remember Bertrilli was talking about this, like Connor Dewar's young, Holmberg's young, Bobby McMahon isn't that young, but he's young in the league. You're depending on Lilligren, like
still asking
young guys.
Matthew Nyes to carry a top line into the playoffs, and he had that sniff last year coming out of college, and
that helps.
We know what Sam Bennett did to him. How much better prepared is he now from that experience? But sometimes these kids need 2 or 3 years of that to be ready for it to help compete for 4 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got to really work on getting punched in the head and assaulted on the ice.
You do, Sam.
Need to figure out how to avoid those spots first.
I would hope next time Sam Bennett comes around, he's better prepared, including maybe bringing a stick up, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. Don't get hurt, Sam.
Yeah.
Don't get hurt.
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence, Sam.
No, it's definitely Sam Bennett. There's no coincidence there.
No.
Not the way he plays.
All of that there's something to be said about having playoff experience.
So,
that's why Edmondson's in and Simone Benoit's out.
Well, I think I was just going to say that. This is... One of the changes they've made, and I see what they were doing with Edmondson. I see the idea. He's like a bigger version of Benoit, maybe a slightly meaner version with the cup experience, and, you know, there's lots to like there, but it is pretty crummy that a guy like Benoit is basically McMahon on defense, played himself up and through the expectations, earned himself an important job here, and has now not gotten a game since the trade deadline. And it's a little disappointing, and I know
he'll play tomorrow night.
Yep. He is in. He's in because Lyubushkin's sick.
Yeah. Yeah, he's sick, so he's not traveling. But
so
let's listen to Keith. We do have one. Do you want to hear
something
on that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, clip six on that.
I'd expect it to be a little bit better, quite honestly, just because he's now stepped back from the lineup and watched, and that's motivating in and of itself. But also, the league is hard when you're playing all the time, when you get a chance to sort of step back and recharge and re-energize. You know, I think it, when you come back into the lineup, you expect to have a little bit more. You know, I think, you know, Betty specifically, I think, has done a really good job for us. Liked a lot of things that he's brought to us, that I don't think the last little stretch has been as good as it was at different points in the season. Hopefully taking a step back a little bit will be beneficial to him and us in the long term.
So I hate the way you're just selling that. Like, yes, it's the chance to take some time off. I'm sure that's what he wanted.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to not play in the NHL.
Yeah, like when you roll up the rim, I won the chance to play again. Great. Yeah.
Listen, I can't stress this enough. 23, 24 guys, just be ready. You think you're on the outside looking in. You think they've forgotten about you. Boom, somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
And you're playing 15 minutes a night, and you're right in the thick of things. So the only thing I can recall is and when we won the Stanley Cup was Doug Glitzer was a pretty good sound NHL defenseman. 500-600 games under his belt. Not playing until Jeff Bookaboom goes down and the guys, and I'm not sure we win without him.
I was, you know, if the Leafs play 10 playoff games this year, I'd be shocked if Benoit doesn't play five. You know, I'd be shocked. Like, whether it's due to injury or need or whatever, like, he's going to get in hockey games for them in the postseason.
Best of 11 in the first round this year?
But what did they play last year? 12? 11?
Just giving need them the benefit of the some depth. For sure. Did we play Matthews?
Yeah, we played it.
Did Matthews? Only thing, we've got Nick Robertson. Yeah. If we want to hear about him coming back and scoring, I know Sammy loves talking about Robertson. Speaking of guys that could come in, I do like the idea of him coming out of the press box in game four or something, sure, shooting one in the net for him, an OT winner or something.
Yeah, let's give him some love.
Okay.
You look at the games, I don't know how many games it is now where he's been a scratch and come in and scored right away. Like I said, he gives us that sort of boost. He worked hard tonight. It was a great goal. Terrific effort by John Tavares to lead to it. John's second period in particular was just absolutely outstanding tonight. And I thought really pushed our team and got our team going. Like that was a really great period by our captain. And then, great spot by Robbie to finish it.
Now, you said you're not thrilled with the Tavares Robertson. Nice.
No, it's a bad line.
Bad line?
But it's a good line when John Tavares is, 2007 or 2014, John Tavares. He was so good.
Can't do it every night.
No.
He doesn't have it in him every night, but he still can throw it back for a game or two.
But if he's off and then it's Nice and Robertson, I don't want that line on the ice, but he was good enough.
Fresh legs for JT.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had tons of pop for whatever reason. Did. I don't know.
Off.
Yeah.
They're off.
A little bit of rest and come in.
A little bit of rest.
Which is important to remember when you get to game 82. Like, they need him to not play game 82. They need it to not matter. They need him to have...
I'd rest him a lot more than just 82.
Yeah, would you?
From here on in. But...
like every other game?
I don't know. You gotta... got to be considerate of him, too, and how he prepares.
They'll have a long break, right? Because they'll play, I think they play Wednesday is their last game before the playoffs. So they'll probably have Wednesday to Monday or Wednesday to Tuesday. They'll probably have 6 or 7 days off. So
get a fresh JT for game
There's
one.
A break.
There you go.
Yeah, all heading down to Boston.
In the meantime, we'll see how fresh they are.
Maybe.
Back-to-back games coming up in Philadelphia tomorrow night.
Yeah.
In Washington Wednesday night.
Big games.
And the Capitals are right in the thick of things
in
the East. So we'll talk about that in the next hour. Also, Sean Reynolds will join us. He is in Florida for the general manager meetings. We're going to talk West Conference after the break. Stick around, everybody.